It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
Metaphorically speaking, like any good sports game or anything else, it depends how you finish. It always comes down to momentum, which we started that conversation in the last couple of weeks with you, that it's how you finish. It's how you finish the program, the contest, if you will, that is going to determine the victor. Now you see what's happening in the home stretch here with that word I say, momentum. You see the president really traveling the country at a wicked pace. You know, let's not get lost on that for a moment either. I mean, if you think about the energy this president is putting out and all the stops he's making and the how inspiring a lot of this is as he meets the people out there, and you can see the excitement in it all. He's like a guy that's really half his age. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, surely it's about half his age, but that's what I get out of it. I mean, the guy's got more energy than anything. And I know a little something about energy here. Let me tell you here. Welcome to the program. It is Malcolm here along with Michael Johns, and welcome to Viewpoint Presents. So this is it. This is it. This is the final rung of the ladder. This is the big race. We're at the moment where America decides. And so election strategy, I think people are on to the games at this point, Michael. I think they're on to what the media is up to. They're on to what the tech giants are up to. They're on to what the political establishment is up to. So I'm going to say to you, and rest assured, I think everything is where it needs to be. How do you feel at this final days?
I feel, I mean, a few observations. Number one is I think you make a very good point about the energy the president's putting into the final days. 14 rallies in 7 states in 3 days and possibly additional ones on election day. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, the person who works harder for the job is more likely to work hard on the job. And I think we see a reflection of that in these final days where we have one candidate and President Trump was a very clear, understandable, and successful vision for the country, and another candidate who is dodging the most serious of questions about possible corruption involving his family, and a track record that is utterly unnotable. And even if those things didn't exist, is apparently so unmotivating and uninspiring that he's really not able to draw any crowd of significance. So that's quite a contrast. And you can't say it's irrelevant from the standpoint of the ramifications for this election. I mean, I've talked about the enthusiasm with you for weeks. I think it's going to be a factor. Questions exist, though. I mean, I think, you know, how do American voters really see Joe Biden? I mean, do they grasp the magnitude of these foreign conflicts, and are they pondering the ramifications of that? Should he be elected president? Have they thought through the fact that repealing the Trump tax cuts means basically tax increases for every working person in this country, including part-time workers? Have they thought through the obvious war on manufacturing that the Obama-Biden administration launched for 8 years and would likely restart? The open borders and the ramifications thereof, you know, 11 to 30 million Americans being granted citizenship and government health insurance, pretty much day one. These are all, and the list goes on. I mean, it's just an immensely concerning agenda that's likely to be influenced by the far left, given Biden's, I think, obvious trading of his basically he's traded off with the left to secure this nomination in the first place. And that's likely what we'd get in a Biden presidency.
Well, they're all good points you bring up right there. They're all good points. But, you know, what I see here out of the gate, when you talked about the rallies, what Biden is attracting versus what Trump is attracting. So Biden's having, they're having these very strange car rallies. And when I first started hearing those and seeing those, Michael, it reminded me of the old drive-in theater where you drive in with your car. I mean, that's a yesteryear moment for the country, more or less. There are still a few hanging around, but not many. And it's where you drive your car up. You may sometimes you have the family in there, or if you're real lucky, you'll have a girlfriend or a young woman in there and watch a great movie by in the car, right? You remember those days?
Good days, driving theater.
I know. And so I get this thinking when they're out there in the cars, he's doing these things, you know, these car rallies. And you know, here's what I get out of that. They have, you have to give it to the left. They have really cloaked themselves, is how I would say it, in COVID land. And I say that in every way that it means. They are so in their using this to the advantage of this candidate who is incapable of talking to the people. He is incapable of talking for any length of time. He is incapable of having any enthusiasm. He's incapable of drawing a crowd together. He is absolutely incapable, Michael, is what he is. So listen, they have used COVID to every advantage of their abilities to throw out there. Well, Joe Biden, he's following the science. Get the hell out of here. You know, he's following the science. That's all they say because they have a candidate that is not worthy of the office and they know it. What do you say to that?
Right. Yeah, I mean, to watch him at these rallies, it's like this old guy screaming crazy in a crazy way at a bunch of cars. I mean, it's a very bizarre scene.
He doesn't talk. He screams his head off. He's an angry old man.
You and I caught on to this. I think we're both a pretty good read of people, and I think we see within the guy. He's filled with rage. He's an angry person. And yet it's interesting to sort of watch that he's tried to, the campaign has poured, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars into trying to market him as sort of a relatable guy, you know, the friendly uncle down the street. This is not that guy. This is a guy who is entangled with all sorts of foreign enemies and powers that with conflicting financial arrangements. Who is, you know, a 47-year record of basically trading influence for political power and positional authority, and now it appears financial gain.
This guy here, now, the way you say the anger, you know what I'm wondering, I'm pondering, I wonder if you know how this happened. And I mean, think about this a moment, everybody. But so here you have a party that talks, they pride themselves, or they talk this crazy story, like they're the voice for, you know, diversity and the voice for those kinds of Americans, and yet, and they are against white, anything white, or that's anti their party, supposedly. And yet they have this whole field of candidates in the Democratic field up there. And Michael, how is it they end up with an angry old white man? Really an angry, vicious, horrible, angry old white man. How do they end up with that?
I think it's an issue of politics and money trumping popular will, because I just still don't believe, and I think there was a point in this primary where we had almost written Biden off as
big time,
the nominee.
Big time, yeah.
You know, he fared extremely poorly. You go back in those Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, you know, I mean, it wasn't really until Super Tuesday that he gained all that traction. And then all of a sudden money flew in and he just blew the rest of these candidates out of the water pretty quickly. You know, all of this represents a challenge to democracy, because I think, you know, we're going to have half this country wake up probably on Wednesday, maybe later if there's entangling or unsettled questions, and be grossly unhappy with the outcome of this election and the direction of this country. It's very problematic, and it's very divisive. And sadly, we don't have in Biden anyone, you know, I mean, he's out there, he's got calling, you know, his opponents chumps in Pennsylvania, and he's a divisive political figure. And this is when he's trying to get those people's votes. Imagine once you give this guy power and authority, how divisive he's going to be.
Yeah. And, you know, the sad reality of all this through this is the story that consistently comes up, Michael, is the media and how twisted it all is. What amuses me, like when you and I, when someone like us read the news, I mean, we read through all of it. And I'm sure most of you out there read through the rubbish as well. Like, for instance, in the LA Times just here, listen to this, the headline, Michael: Trump and Biden focus on the Midwest as Harris makes a play for Texas. Oh, Kamala Harris is not making a play for Texas.
Texas is not in play. That's the biggest lie going.
And it ain't by Kamala Harris for sure. Let's put it that way.
The president is going to win the popular vote of Texas by a seven-figure number, in my judgment. It's outrageous. It's an outrageous misrepresentation.
What they do,
well, and the message in, you know, within it is designed to tell Trump voters that, you know, we're in trouble and, you know, don't even bother getting out and voting. I'm here to say we're not in trouble. It's an entirely winnable election. Every good reason for optimism. Yeah. Get out and vote wherever you are.
Yeah, let me finish that narrative with the LA Times. Listen to this, Michael. With that headline, here's the message they put out there. President Trump is on the defense. I mean, this is their analysis now, the Los Angeles Times. President Trump is on the defense as he and Joe Biden campaign in the Midwest on Friday, and Kamala Harris makes a play for a newly competitive Texas. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I'm sure her agenda is going to go really well down there of single payer health care and,
Green
New Deal. Take that, hey, you know, calling all Texas energy workers. I mean, show up to these Harris. It's completely designed really to demoralize the Trump supporters. And hopefully that won't, occur. I mean, the president won Texas in 2016 by about 800,000 votes, and I think he'll probably fare even better this time.
You know, on that point, Michael, everybody I've talked to in knowledgeable positions, that's a good way to say it, in the last many days, I have to tell you, everybody seems to have a little jump in their step, and I've asked them all, well, certainly in private and every time I can in public on the microphone here, how they feel or sense the election is going to turn out. And people feel really encouraged right now because of where I started this program, talking about momentum and an overall arching election strategy. You know, it's hard to fathom or think back that this man was in the hospital suffering with COVID, what, like 10 days ago or
Amazing.
Something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and look at the guy.
Well, remember, I had said, if you recall my, how I presented that, I think in our first show after his hospitalization, I said, you know, as he recovers, when he comes out of this, there's a good chance he's got an amazing comeback story.
Right.
And this is a comeback story. You know, a guy who was hospitalized with a serious disease, beats it off, comes back. And, you know, now, like I said, 14 rallies in seven states in 3 days, and it's probably going to be more on election day. I mean, this is, you know, an incredible story, an incredible American success story, this guy. I mean, how fortunate we've had it's been to have his leadership for 4 years, and I simply hope we're going to have it for four more.
Well, by all indications, if momentum is any indication, my friend, I think that it does seem like it is looking pretty good moving forward. So I would have to think that that could happen. You know, I'm thinking also what's on people's minds.
The little Wayne endorsement seals it for me.
Did you see that one with rapper Topher, was it? Topher?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that was something.
Well, Topher, I know Topher. Topher's a great guy.
Really?
Topher is a great guy. Yeah, he is, you ought to have him on your show.
I would love to have him on.
Yeah, I can get you Topher. Topher's a close
I mean, I listened
pal.
To him and I was
he's
really inspired
great,
with him. I was really
well,
inspired.
He's done pro-Trump rap songs.
I love him.
He's fantastic. And there's a few other people I know in that genre that have done some really incredible work. I mean, it's actually one of the untold stories of the Trump revolution and the Tea Party revolution too, that we inspired, I think, a lot of artistic contributions of individuals who said, you know, politics isn't really my thing, but I know how to write songs and, you know, I'm a musician, and they put their skill sets and added a lot of value in that way. Topher's fantastic.
Well, let me add to you on Topher, and I mean this all in all sincerity. When I seen him speak, Michael, about this race, and I seen him speak about the president, but more than that, when I seen him speak about Black America, really, honestly, I was blown away. I mean, he's a really intelligent guy. He is a very articulate in his thoughts. And man, he's got, you know, I'm a fan. He got me. He really opened my eyes. He's the kind of people we need with voices out there. And he just put it out there. Very straight, very straightforward. But I was very impressed.
Well, he's, you know, he's an Air Force vet.
Exactly.
As I recall, I think.
Yeah, he is. He's a vet, yeah.
You know, he's a very cool guy. And the only problem I have is he's been marketing his songs predominantly on TikTok, which is owned by China. I got to talk to him about that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, fantastic guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
grew up in Mississippi.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool guy. Anyways, very impressive. You know, more and more of these, I'm really encouraged with more and more of these key people that since Kanye West came out and said the things he did, what, about a year and a half ago or something like that. There's been a lot of them that have come out publicly for liberty, first of all, for what's right for Black America. And they're tired of being held back, I guess, is the right way maybe to say it, or kept on the socialist Democrat plantation, or any of us don't want to be there. I mean, the Jewish people shouldn't be there. The Hispanics shouldn't be there. Women shouldn't be there. Nobody should be on that plantation. Michael, that plantation is ugly as hell.
Well, and it's a thought silo. I mean, it's not like there's really, I mean, it's just filled with all of these cliches.
Groupthink.
And yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm hoping that we're cracking. I'll tell you one thing. I'll predict this right now. This president is going to do extremely well with African-American voters on Tuesday. You know, and I'm talking, when I buy extremely well, I'm talking, you know, 18, 20 million plus voters, at least a doubling of his performance in 2016. And why wouldn't he do that well, given the track record that he's had? I mean, he really focused on African-American issues. You can't say that about Obama and Biden. You know, they courted that vote once they had it. And this has been true of Democrats through the years. They corner the vote and they take it for granted and they do nothing, you know, and generation after generation of these urban communities, you know, slips into poverty and fatherless homes and crime and drug addiction and bad schools, and none of it changes. And,
amen,
you know, like, why would you not at this juncture reward a president who drove African-American unemployment to the lowest point in history, and not by accident, because he consciously focused on it? Those were tax cuts that were designed to incentivize low and mid-income wage creation and low and mid-income job creation.
That is so powerful. That you're so right with what you say. It, not by accident, a purposeful. I mean, that's got to resonate with everybody. So purposeful. I mean, instead of just putting, you know, his mouth out there and not the action, he went ahead and made it happen. And it wasn't accidental. It was very purposeful. Guys, as you say, like Topher that we just speak about, Lil Wayne, so many others, they're seeing that in the community, and they're seeing how that those policies have impacted real people. I mean, they've made a change for real people. So that's very encouraging. And I'll tell you what, I'll go one step further now that we're making predictions and talking about this election. I'll say this much. He's going to win a historic amount of the Black American vote. Absolutely, Michael. We agree on that. And that's what's going to put him over the finish line and give him a major, massive victory. And we're going to, that's going to be fun. And, you know, and I really feel good about that. Because,
I'm with you on that. I'm not
hearing a lot
of people say that, but I think it's true. I think, you know, you look at a lot of these swing states. I mean, already, I don't know if you saw the Politico piece yesterday on Miami,
but
that's kind of, you know, the Dems fall back on they don't have the panhandle. They don't have Central Florida. Yep. You know, they don't have that Tallahassee region. They don't do well on the Western coast at all. So they have to get big turnout in Miami, and they're not getting it. And in fact, just the opposite, Trump's support down there in Dade and Broward is really quite strong.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, looking very positive. And that's crucial because, you know, this Florida is essential, and Pennsylvania likely is essential. And I think that also gets to the point of, you know, how, you know, what happens here in Philly, you know, which is what's usually tilted Pennsylvania in the Dem direction, is if you're able to capture a decent percentage, doesn't have to be 50%, but if you're able to capture 20-25% of that African-American vote in Philly, that, you know, that should be enough to swing things, because a good part of the rest of the state is Trump country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, if you're listening on this on America Out Loud Talk Radio on Sunday, by chance, I got to tell you, the president is taking a trip there tonight in Miami. You see that, Michael? 11:30, I think it is, or something, on the East Coast, I believe. He'll be there in Miami. I mean, now, how is that the guy is always working? He's going down there for a midnight rally or something. I mean, how cool is that to be in Miami, go to a midnight rally to see Trump? I mean, come on.
Remember in 2016, he did the same thing. He had these rallies. In fact, he had one in Virginia. It started at 1:30 or 2 a.m. and lines, you know, forever.
Yeah.
Because there's something about hope and Americanism that inspires people to want to turn out and be a part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's fighting spirit is still left in this country. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the motivations that are drawing voters behind Biden. I assume it's something they don't like in Trump. I don't think it's anything they see that they're drawn to in Biden's agenda.
Exactly.
I guess we got to figure that out and address it. But, man, this is just such an incredibly defining moment in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. I feel like that gets said every 4 years, but it's just very difficult to see this country not blossoming in a major way if the president's reelected. And it's just very difficult to see us ever digging our way out of 4 years of globalism and abandonment of American interests under a Biden presidency.
Well, I got to tell you, just in the opening segment here, Michael, I feel pretty good, actually. And I feel pretty juiced up. And, you know, we talk about momentum with the president's momentum. I think we have momentum right here, you and I do, on Viewpoint Presents. And let me tell everybody a couple of things there about that. And so, listen, we're listening here. Now, you are to Viewpoint Presents here. And this is it's our signature news magazine, the whole Viewpoint brand here. Michael and I are on every Sunday with you at 11 a.m., and we run an encore later that day on America Out Loud Talk Radio at 7 p.m. Of course, you know, now let me also tell folks, Michael, I don't know if you are aware of this, but I need to tell all listeners now that we are now approaching our 3-year anniversary, by the way, Michael, for the Viewpoint brand. We kicked off Viewpoint this Sunday 3 years ago, if you can believe that. OK, and it's a 3-year anniversary. Guess what? You'll never guess the day. November 3, Tuesday, Election Day.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's it. And 3 years ago, we celebrated that. And I can't believe the day just happens to be Election Day. It's not a Sunday, but it is a Tuesday.
And, what are we doing? Champagne? What do we got?
Well, I've been thinking about that. I wanted to get your ideas, actually. I hadn't had a chance to talk to you yet about it, but I was thinking about that. What are we going to do Election Day to celebrate this? You'll be on the Voice of a Nation with me. In fact, let me tell folks as well that Michael's been on with me. You've been hearing him all this last week, and you'll hear him this next week. He's tremendous voice, and his analysis has been amazing. He's been joining me. We've had a lot of interesting guests on, great conversation. And that plays a daily, Monday through Friday, on the Voice of a Nation on America Out Loud Talk Radio, of course. That's at 6, and then there's an encore at 10. So just flip the hours, 6 and 10 on the weekdays, and 10 and 6 on the Viewpoint brand on the weekends. Kind of funny how that works out. Just coincidental, but it does work out. And so all of our shows, including this one, do go to podcast. You can hear them on demand anywhere in the world on all kinds of outlets, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart Podcast, any of them. But on our signature show on the Talk Radio Network, you'll also hear us on iHeart Radio. You'll hear us on AHA Radio, Radio Guide FM, TuneIn, a whole lot of streaming networks. You'll find this network right here. So just look it up. You get the apps, by the way, back at AmericaOutloud.com, or just look them up at the App Store, Apple or Android. Now, so I feel momentum. I feel juiced up. We feel pretty good here. I hope you do out there as well, as we now take a look here. I don't know. I just feel like celebrating today. It's like this whole thing, even the earlier program, I just want to celebrate. There's something about it. I don't want to talk doom and gloom. I want to celebrate. I want to celebrate this election coming up in a couple of days and bring our energy, bring the president across the finish line and make it happen. So up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about, well, not just the presidency, but the Senate and the House, for that matter, a divided government versus the autocracy or totalitarianism, and what that means to our nation. Right now, we're seeing some pretty outrageous statements being made by the far left that my fellow Americans would change what you and I are talking about right now. This amazing republic we call America. And we're not going to have that. We'll be back after this quick pause with more Viewpoint Presents. in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
War on America's cities and claims of racism in the ranks of law enforcement have spirited a renewed debate on racial equality. It was Alexis de Tocqueville who reminded us Americans are so enamored of equality, they would rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. To which I say, be warned of the shiny object, America. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, it's a fight for the soul of humanity.
American Democracy in Action. Viewpoint presents Election 2020.
I always shake my head in disbelief when the American people, they don't often give the power to just one belief system or one ideology, and it's because of our makeup as a nation, but they hardly ever do that where you get all the branches of government. It's typically a divided government, which some people would argue and say that's not a good thing. Others would argue it is a good thing for checks and balances. How do you feel about that right now with so much at stake?
Well, the argument for it was always that action by government was more commonly negative and not in the interest of the American people than it was positive, and that those sort of checks and balances were helpful because they diluted ideological purity. But that was based in an era where the two parties were functioning and working together. I think we basically had a decision by the Democrat Party, certainly in 2017, if not earlier than that, that was not the formula they were going to follow, that they were going to, they would torch the village for political power. And that means not interacting or negotiating or working in good faith bipartisanship. So you see all these candidates who may not have ever been, in Congress yet running, saying that they're committed to the spirit of bipartisanship and things like that. That's great, and that's nice as campaign rhetoric, but you get down there and the leadership basically defines what happens, and they're not right now on the Democrat side inclined to do that. That's not the message that Nancy Pelosi is sending to Democrats: go out and cut deals and work with Republicans. They're saying, she's telling them to stay away and don't vote how I tell you to. That's, I think, a very unfortunate development, and I think it's ultimately a threat to democratic principles, because, this is a diverse and large country, and every member of Congress who's elected, represents, a small seven-figure number of people. They should be able to go back down there and pursue legislative solutions and answers to the issues that are addressing them and not have to, break down 1,000 different doors to do that. Meaning common sense should be able to prevail just because it's common sense and it makes sense. And that's the risk in this election, ultimately, is that we end up with a government in this climate that is in the hands of Democrats, and that they're able to take some real operational steps that are going to facilitate vast sweeping changes in this country. When, as you and I know, I think this, even if this president ends up on the losing side of this, which I'm hopeful will not be the case, he's going to take over 60 million votes in this country. So you're going to have like a very sizable part of this electorate who doesn't feel represented in that form of government. It's very problematic.
Yeah, there was always a problem with common sense. It's not very common, obviously. And
Institutions.
Yeah, no, sure. Not at all. Now, playing on what you're talking about with that theme there, I'll say this. The one thing I've noticed, you look at the track record from the left, Michael, and the policies. Here's what gives me a little bit of optimism. Now, follow me on this and see what you think, if this makes sense. One of the things I've seen is that when the left comes out with all these crazy ideas on the level of, you know, Green New Deals and things of that craziness, building bigger government all the time, which is, by golly, not at all what we want in this nation. We broke away from that back in the day again, and that's not what we want. And that's really the fight here when it comes to patriots and conservatism and our core roots as a nation, in why we so love the Constitution and this beautiful, beautiful paradise we live in. But, you know, the one thing I see about the left all the time, Michael, is this. So it's kind of a drip, drip, drip effect. So they put all these things out there and these crazy ideas about building, building. It's like a sandcastle you put on the beach. They keep building the castle bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, what happens is, in doing all that, you know, a lot of people, they offer free this, free that, free the other. They get sucked up into it because it's easy for some people in this paradise to get sucked up in all that free stuff. But then as soon as the American people awaken, Michael, and they find that there's a price to pay for all of that stuff, and it never is what it is, and there is a bankrupting going on of the nation, then all of a sudden, when the Democrats stop and they lose that momentum and they lose a lot of the populace and the people, as they've done now, I would argue with anybody when you look at America standing tall. And then what happens is, Michael, and here's the crazy moment here, I would say to you, their answer to all of that, well, their answer is to change the rules. When they can't win by the rules, they want to change the rules because that's the only way they can win. Change it all to fit their nab. That's pretty sick, don't you think?
Yeah, it's particularly sick because when you look back on the filibuster rule, I mean, how many pieces of legislation, it's how I can answer the question, hundreds of pieces of legislation that didn't get through in those first 2 years of the Trump administration because we held on to the cloture and filibuster rule requiring 60 vote passage of legislation. And we didn't have 60, we didn't have, you know, we had 53 Republicans. We couldn't get seven more Dems to join us on some of these things. And they passed, realizing that Mitch McConnell could have, with the snap of a finger, gotten rid of that cliff rule. He held on to this tradition, I think ostensibly in the hopes that that good faith would be returned in the event that we lost the Senate. Mm-hmm. And I see no basis for that. Obama's been out there saying, get rid of it. Harris is on record as saying she's opposed to it. And Biden is typically not answering questions, which means you can expect the worst.
Yeah. Do you think he should have done that? So, do you think McConnell should have changed it?
Well, you know, there's no constitutional mandate for it. So you're not violating any constitutional principles and getting rid of it. It has a long, elaborate history in how it came to be. The Senate, where I actually worked for a period of time, is an institution of extraordinary, historically, of recognition of tradition and definitely sort of the upper body of the legislative branch of government, where you don't have as much poisonous rhetoric and as much personalization of politics. But I think we should have been open-minded to it. I don't really even recall there being much of a debate on it, quite honestly. And, you know, there were a lot of good people who couldn't get confirmations because they couldn't get 60 votes because McConnell got rid of it, as you might recall, for Harry Reid got rid of it originally for the justices to get these federal justices, including Supreme Court nominees, in place. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the Elena Kagan thing. I don't think Kagan could have gotten 60 votes. And of course, we said at the time, look, you're going to come to resent that regret making that move. And, you know, they weren't responsive to that argument. And of course, Tea Party movement goes out, takes back the Senate in 2014. And we now have dozens of federal circuit court judges and appellate judges across this country in place because of that.
And three Supreme Court justices now, right?
You got it.
I mean, that was a game changer right there.
A lot of conservative base, a lot of the Trump base, too, has sort of said, what are you waiting for? I mean, this is, you know, essentially, you know, a climate of absolute conflict where there's going to be winners and losers. And there's no longer any pretense of bipartisanship in any of this. And that, you know, maybe we should have. But that's all water under the bridge. As it is. I think at this point, the danger is this. If in a worst case scenario, Biden wins the presidency and you have the Democrats take the Senate, here are the things you can expect. Number one, the packing of the court is clear. They're going to expand the size of the Supreme Court, maybe considerably expand it. You know, we've been people are thinking, well, they're going to add like three additional. No, they could double the size of the court. You and I have talked about the fact that there's not even any credentials for that position. They could stack it with very progressive activists.
They're also talking about rotating judges, Michael. You hear that one?
Saw that as well. Mm-hmm. And then on the cloture and filibuster rule, you can absolutely expect that they're going to get rid of that. I just don't think they're going to have any degree of historical appreciation for what McConnell did. I think it'll be one of the first acts. So you've got, you know, a House in control of Democrats passing legislation that's passed by the Senate, signed by Biden, and you might have, you know, basically an incredible degree of radical initiatives and agenda items that get passed through that. Basically, if you take that unity task force and all of the components of it, which includes some of the most extraordinary and radical ideas like reparations, I think you could pretty much expect that that'll be the agenda that'll drive the Democrat Party if you give Biden the presidency and Democrats the Senate.
Okay, but what about this scenario now? What if Trump takes the presidency, but the Dems take the Senate and play to that same point with that rule there? Then that would have said they made the right decision the last run, correct?
Well, yeah, and in that juncture, I think what has to happen is, again, hit the restart button on the relationship with the Democrats, see if we can maybe start with infrastructure and some of these things where I know that there's support on the Democrat side for doing these things. It's outrageous that it hasn't been done. That's the first thing. And then you're going to see, just unfortunately, a lot more governing by executive order, which I'm not really a huge fan of. I think it's very easy to repeal executive orders. Biden can repeal a lot of these Trump executive orders on the first day of the presidency. And they inevitably are all challenged in the courts anyway. I mean, like, look at the sanctuary city and the federal funding executive order, perfect example. You know, it's not been a dime cut to any sanctuary cities. That stuff's tangled in the courts. All these executive orders just get immediately challenged by progressive causes or organizations or anybody who is standing basically to bring a suit. And it gets bogged down and not acted on.
Well, everything gets bogged down. But if we're talking things like infrastructure, you just say, and we're talking things like healthcare and the overall arch of debt spending we're doing as a nation, you're looking at some of these things that are important to everyday Americans. And then what I want to ask you is, all right, if we understand what's important to folks, but yet we can't seem to come together as a people and we put in a divided government, what does that say to all of that?
Well, I'm not sure it projects anything nationally, because you realize every one of these Senate votes is a state vote. Every House vote is, you know, a microcosm of a state. So it reflects the sentiments in those particular areas. It's not a grand strategy. Only the president and vice president are elected by all the people. That's what will be reflective of the national mandate and the national will. But divided government was something that I'm not sure it ever really made complete sense, but it made a lot more sense when you had a spirit of bipartisanship and a willingness of both parties to negotiate and arrive at, you know, something that was acceptable to both sides. But that's just not the way this Congress has been functioning for years now. And if you put in divided government down there, you're basically asking for inaction. And I don't think that's what the American people want at this point.
All right. Amen. All right. Nightmare situation. Let's take 2 minutes and talk about nightmare situation. They win the presidency, they take the Senate back, and they retain the House. What does that look like, buddy?
It's a quick walk to socialism from there. I think that you see a country that very quickly, in a series of steps, will begin to be completely not reflective of the country that you've known. And on core issues, including the Bill of Rights itself, including, you know, First Amendment, Second Amendment issues, I think those will be ones that they hone in on very quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, have you seen one Democrat who's stood up and said, hey, you know, I don't agree with the New York Post reporting, but I don't believe Twitter should be censoring it. I didn't hear a peep out of any of them. I mean, it's outrageous that they would not stand up on that vital First Amendment issue in this moment. In fact, I think there would have been a lot of national respect for a Democrat who had stood up and said that that's not appropriate. But they're acting in complete coordination and as you know, in unification. And on Second Amendment issues, you know, look at that Biden interview with CNN when Anderson Cooper says, you know, they're concerned that, you know, if you win, you're going to come for their guns. And he says, bingo, you know, that's what he's talking about. So what does it mean for Second Amendment rights? I mean, already we've had this right, which is so clearly written in my judgment. There's no footnotes or qualifications. And, you know, and I just think you're going to see very rapid erosion of those rights.
Well, that is the autocracy we're talking about right there. That's the invitation right there. And then they'll take the ball and run with it. You may not get it back. Well, some people are saying ever with some of the rules they put in play. Pretty dangerous stuff, isn't it? You know?
Well, and the immigration issues, I think, are terrifying, too, because you're looking at 11 to 30 million illegals that are going to be granted.
Right.
So basically, here's the nightmare scenario. It goes even further than what I'm describing, because you have the 11 to 30 million. They feel that those are going to be Democrat voters, largely dependent on and driven by welfare concerns and their voting patterns. They feel that Puerto Rico will be granted statehood, the DC will be granted statehood. That would afford them, in their eyes, again, I'm not saying that they're right politically in their judgment, but they believe that gives them four more senators, two from Puerto Rico, two from DC, that would permanently tilt the balance of the Senate in their favor. And, you know, there's even serious talk among Democrats about dividing up California and possibly into two or more states that would again, offer them additional seats. So you're looking in the courts and in the Congress and the methodologies employed by the Congress, something that really puts the socialist agenda on, you know, on a rapid fire path to passage and to implementation. I don't think there's a consensus for that in the country, and yet you can envision a political scenario in which that possibly could be an outcome. And I just think it's a wake-up call to the American people at this point. You know, you got to get out and vote for Republicans, and you got to vote for Trump. That's not a path that is going to work for you personally.
Amen.
It's not a path that's going to work for your kids or their kids.
Amen. Well, listen, as we turn the page here, let me say to you, I'm just thinking here, Michael, I tell folks we're juiced up, excited, and then I bring in that bit of bad news, huh? I mean, that doesn't tally out, does it now?
You know? Yeah, but if being intellectually honest, we got to confront reality,
that's
right?
It,
I mean,
buddy.
It's easy
that's
to,
it.
We end up in these situations because we dodge it. I can't believe how close we've walked to the cliff. Can you?
Yeah. Well, no, I can't. That's why I put it out there. Reluctantly, I said what I said, and I swallowed hard when I said it. Oh, my God, that's just not going to happen. But, you know, I don't feel like that's in the cards. And we'll take a pause here. We'll be back with more Viewpoint Presents in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
All right, we bring it home here with you here on Viewpoint Presents. Here it's Malcolm along with Michael Johns, and we are excited here and pretty juiced about this election and what's in front of us here. Again, for those of us who see America as a paradise and as an opportunity and all that is right with the world, there's a lot to be thankful for and a lot to be blessed for. And listen, I got to point it out because it's a fact. Sometimes we get caught in all the weeds of these political circles and all the hate and, you know, but there's more than that with our great country and what we stand for. And so I want to take a moment to thank you as well as we celebrate here with our Viewpoint brand. Michael and I just started this show, a couple of months back, Michael, I believe it was, about 3 months, I think now.
Episode
like
15.
There you go, Malcolm. I didn't know that, but episode, okay, so we're inside, coming, closing in here. And the Viewpoint this Sunday, the sister brand to Viewpoint Presents is celebrating 3 years here this week, November 3. Let me start here with you. You know, you hear me all the time. You're going to chuckle at this or maybe not. I don't know. But you hear me all the time on the network spots and all on the net. And you help write stuff. We talk all the time and you help put stuff together. And you know how I say it's the soul of humanity, right? The soul of humanity. That's the fight ahead. Correct.
Right.
You hear me say that all the time. It's a talking point I've used here from the beginning of America Out Loud. I look at that as our point of interest. It's the point of what we're here for. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. I mean, that's what that means. That's it should bounce
in
your
eardrums. A recurring theme, I think, if you were going to look at your rhetoric and your points and your excellent commentary, has been that we are engaged in a classic battle between good and evil. I mean, that is a recurring theme in your approach to all this. I also subscribe to that, not in all cases, but you know, it would be if you don't feel those two spirits at work in this world, you're not paying close enough attention. There are forces of good and there you can see them in a lot of the American people. I mean, it's really continues to be what makes this country so great, are that the people are good. And I think they're good largely because they're God believing. Mm-hmm. I mean,
amen.
You know, 91% of this country believes in a higher being. It's an incredible number. I don't think we agree on much at that level. I mean, that's probably the biggest consensus item in this country. Yeah. And it drives Kerry, which is another thing. When you look at the Biden administration, one of the things they really want to close down are all these religious affiliated philanthropic and charity organizations.
That's right.
They've got a basis to do all those. And, you know, they serve such a vital role when you look at what are the options for those who are in need. I mean, we've always been able to rely on some degree of private and nonprofit philanthropy. And, you know, the far left of this country cannot stand that. They hate it. It's in the way of their vision of total governmental control of those functions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, good and evil is the core. Thank you for bringing it up. It's the core of everything I do. I do believe it is at the center of every argument, every discussion. I believe there is a fight of evil on our planet. It is pretty serious. It's pretty severe. And actually, Michael, it was the whole mission of the birth of America Out Loud. I never intended this to be what it is. It happened all very resourcefully because it was supposed to happen that way, I guess, is all I could say to you. And, you know, a lot of people came into my life that would have not have normally come into my life. Classic case of you. We became very dear friends very commonality of thinking and very conservative minded people and love our country and principally driven. But, you know, I don't look at that relationship as accidental. All these things that have happened in my life have been very, very intentional. And the fight of good and evil is real. It's at the center of the storm here. In fact, it's why President Trump will get this term back in the White House. I feel in my soul here and my heart for sure. So that's a beautiful thing. And it is at the fight of this whole argument here. But the soul of humanity is important. And I got to share with you real quickly, you know what really gets me and where I was going to start with this conversation. I don't know if you've seen this at all, but in the last few days, it was pointed out to me from listeners. I did not see it in full confession, but I've seen many listeners had pointed out to me that Joe Biden is using the soul of the nation in the last many days as a campaign. He's not using Build Back Better anymore. He's using the soul of the nation. So they're asking me if I'm going to sue Joe Biden for stealing my talk. What do you think?
Well, you better get some copyrights in there. But yeah, I mean, isn't one of the classic categories of, you know, evil always comes walking in the cloth of good. And you see that in the rhetoric, and you saw it in the rhetoric of his, you know, of his statement where he couldn't bring under God, you know, and finish the statement that he mentioned, because it's so inherently, yeah. And of course, famously, you know, he was denied communion in, I think it was North Carolina, yeah, the Catholic Church, where he attempted to get communion and over his positions on abortion. And, mm-hmm, you know, I am one of those people who believes that abortion is evil. I will tell you, I've worked for three largely pro-choice politicians. And one story I never told you was in the Senate. I was once asked to try, in when we were engaged in floor debate over third term abortions, to find examples where in the absence of abortion, the woman would have lost her life, right? This is a classic liberal talking point that, you know, these cases are medically necessary. And I want to tell you, I went to the Library of Congress. I got a list of obstetricians all over this country, including at some of the most reputable institutions. And I, you know, when you're calling from the Senate, and unlike somewhere else, I mean, they'll talk to you, and I'm saying, can you give me examples? And it was always like, well, she already had anxiety and her anxiety would be induced, or, you know, she really didn't have the home life that was quite prepared for it. And it always fell back on some issue that you very easily could have seen tackled with adoption or some other, or just general support for a pregnant mother. I never was able to identify, for the purposes of that very important debate, any clear-cut answer where the woman would have lost her life if the abortion was not actually performed. Those such examples may in fact exist, but I was telling you, in my own research, it was very difficult to identify one.
That's a beautiful example you put out there. Thank you for that, to remind people of the forces of evil. That was perfect. I mean, there's no better example than that. And when you see the young children that are being murdered in the light of that, and specifically the harm and the hit to Black America, the millions and millions of souls that are lost because of that, it's pretty striking, Michael.
It really is. You think of all of the, even just all of the lost life and the lost talent, you
yeah,
know, you think about, you know, was there a doctor in there or a scientist who would have identified the cure to cancer, or other lost,
or a president,
you know, acts of genius and be a president who would have led us through difficult times. Mm-hmm. It's all incredibly, interesting. So I listened to our colleague, Joseph Pangaro, and his wife.
What did you think?
Three p.m. show on America Out Loud. And I learned something. I was not aware of the message put behind the brick from in the Vatican.
I heard that.
Hear that story?
I did. What do you think?
Shout out to those guys and their great show, because they really, that was enlightening to me that this apparently was decades ago that this individual had this vision that Trump would actually become president, and was, you know, essentially told, you know, if that's true, you really you need to muster a lot of prayer on his behalf. And that and apparently I think they referenced that there's even a documentary out there to that effect. Wow, that's really, you know, and there's a lot of people on our side who do believe that this was so improbable and so unlikely, and that there were so many forces, and I can tell you, just going through thinking about through the campaign, so many forces aligned against this president that, you know, the idea of this being an act of divine intervention on behalf of this divinely blessed country of ours is not too far a stretch of a thought. I think it's entirely conceivable, and I certainly hope that sentiment and engagement will continue here over the next few days and give this president four more years.
Yeah, so well said, buddy. It's funny you bring up that brick argument. I couldn't believe it I didn't know that either, by the way. But when they brought that up on their show, it was like, and I thought to myself, Michael's going to hear that. He's going to find out if that's true or not, because I didn't know. There's very little that gets by you, John, so let me tell you. Very little that gets by you. He'll ring me up or send me a text that, did you see, or did you hear, or whatever. It's kind of funny. Hey, I got to tell you something else. I think you'll appreciate this, Michael. So as we are here on Sunday now, just a couple of days before the big election, on Monday, tomorrow on The Voice of a Nation, you'll be with me and we'll have our great show at 6 o'clock on The Voice of a Nation. You'll hear Michael and I going to be full throttle there. And the day before the election and talking about so many things that are so important to our great country. But here's the point I want to tell you about that I think you'll find very interesting. At 7 p.m. on Monday, this is just after The Voice of a Nation, Michael, there's going to be a program, which is actually a second hour, coincidentally, but a separate hour of Voice of a Nation. And I just did the program, so I already know because it's in the bag, and it's quite something. Do you remember the show Remington Steele with Pierce Brosnan?
Right, you raised that with me.
I did, yeah. And 007, Pierce Brosnan. In fact, you see that just yesterday, Sean Connery passed away
at 90.
Amazing, yeah, man. I love Sean Connery. Big fan of Sean Connery. You know, big shout out to Sean Connery with the Angels.
Probably
right
the best
now.
James Bond, don't you think?
100%. I really, everything about him, his tone, his mannerisms, he made that whole brand, made it what it is. But anyways, on Remington Steele, if you all remember out there that show, if you remember Laura Holt was the woman on there who eventually ended up marrying Pierce Brosnan. It was one of the best shows out there at the time. And anyways, that lady, Stephanie Zimbalist, who is the daughter, as you all probably remember, of the big FBI show, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Well, Stephanie Zimbalist is on a special premiere of Voice of the Nation, 7 p.m. after Michael and I on Monday. And Monday, I've got I'll tell you, Michael, you're going to love this show. You're going to love this lady. She makes predictions in there about Trump. She makes predictions on what's going to happen the next day. She talks about a lot of different things, and she really gets into the core of our country and what the stakes are. I was really, truly impressed with her.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, you're going
to
like it.
We'll approach our show with the closing arguments for Donald Trump's reelection.
Absolutely. That's like, where we're at.
Like seasoned attorneys wrapping up. I mean, we've prevented these. We've dropped these little seeds of evidence throughout 15 episodes. Right. And I think what we'll do is, really approach this with wrapping it all up into one, because it's a very clear cut decision in my judgment.
And your judgment is fairly accurate, sir. And we are here at that moment again. And big thank you to all of you out there listening, but to my colleague, Michael Johns, one of the best conservative commentators and analysts and speakers in the nation by far. And he's here every week with me here. And certainly you hear him on The Voice of a Nation. Here's a frequent flyer there. But he's with me for these couple of weeks covering the election. He mentioned to me a couple of weeks back, said, Malcolm, we got to do something terrific here. We have to make a dent to make a mark here for this very important election. And we have to drive a bigger conversation out there. He was very concerned. And here we are doing exactly that. And we'll do it again this week here. We don't know what's going to happen in the days after the election. Our sense is there will be a lot of news. There will be a lot of breaking news. There'll be a lot of information that we need to talk about. That was the essence of why we felt we needed to be ready, willing, and ready to jump at the moment's notice of what has taken place, so we can at least warn the people or provide the analysis for the people of what's important. So on that note, my fellow Americans, thank you as always for being with us here on the journey here. And again, catch us on Monday on The Voice of a Nation and that powerful show with Stephanie Zimbalist. You'll really enjoy this, I promise you. I was very, very encouraged with her. What a wonderful woman here. Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Now off the line Topher up for you, right?
Oh, Topher. That's, I wanted to get that in there. Yeah, you're going to promise to get me that interview.
Also, yeah, and then shout out also to Tootsuite. Tootsuite.com, one of the great pro-Trump conservative musicians around, and wonderful guy and a good friend. Hey. Another guy would be a good guest for you.
Hey, Tootsuite. All right. Well, Topher, I was really blown away, so we'll have to make that happen. I'd love to interview him and talk to him about the beautiful things that are going on in Black America. And God willing, this election day, Black America will stand tall for freedom, liberty, our Constitution, and our way of life here in America is what we're counting on here. Thank you for being part of the mission here. Remember, as always, it's time to get involved and get loud.